Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David Latuli, with some unusual theme music, not our usual recorded type, but live in studio from the early music group Artifice. They'll be performing for us in the first part of this hour. I'll also talk with Michael Morgan of the Oakland East Bay Symphony, who talks about his themed concert Notes from Mexico, which is tomorrow evening at the Paramount Theater. Funny man Frank Olivier will share details about his one-man twisted cabaret and pandemonium vaudeville show. Plus, Peter Robinson will stop in with a movie review and suggestions for the great outdoors for springtime. That is a live studio performance from the early music ensemble Artifice, music from their Resonance of Salzburg concert, which will be presented in Palo Alto tomorrow, in Berkeley on Saturday, and here in San Francisco on Sunday. It's the debut of Artifice, courtesy of the San Francisco Early Music Society. Collectively, these members have or continue to play with such prestigious ensembles as the American Bach Soloists and Magnificat from Philharmonia Baroque, and now they've created a new ensemble of their own called Artifice. Here to talk about it, as well as playing for us, is Cynthia Miller-Freivogel. We heard her on Viola d'Amore, and Catherine Heater, who plays harpsichord, but we did not have the harpsichord in for today's performance, but they're both going to share some details about the ensemble. Welcome to both of you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having us.
Hey.
Well, let's start with what's always fun to look at is the viola d'amore. That's quite an instrument you ladies have there. Talk to us a little bit about the history of that instrument, if you would.
The history of this instrument is something that actually, at this point, people don't know a lot about, mostly from reconstructing what we find and kind of putting together from treatises and things like that. My personal history with the instrument is that I moved away from the Bay Area about 5 years ago, away from these my favorite colleagues here that are in the room, and I decided while I was sort of underemployed and finding my way in Amsterdam when I arrived there that I was going to at least learn how to play the d'amore, partially inspired by my colleague here, Tekla, who had commissioned one, and this music is very special because it's for two d'amores, and you don't find that so often.
Well, let's back up a little bit first about the instruments themselves. Unusually, number of strings. If you're used to a violin, which has four strings,
right? So the d'amore has. My particular model has six strings.
This is Tekla Cunningham.
And actually, it has 12 strings. There are six playing strings and then six sympathetic resonating strings, which are strung in metal underneath. So what happens when you play the bowed strings is that the whole instrument just begins to vibrate with this sort of silvery glow. It's very beautiful.
That's the love part.
And Cynthia has a seven-string model, so she has even more strings. So she has 14 strings, and it makes for an incredibly long peg box because you have to fit all of these pegs in to tune the strings.
Interesting. So, in terms of size, though, it's about the size of a viola. Small viola.
Yeah.
Let's hear how those resonant strings interact with the regular strings.
Well, if you play the strings with bow, just like you play the violin on your shoulder, and they're tuned in a chord, so you get, this is just with no fingers on the strings. And I don't know about whether you can hear underneath, but
I can.
Underneath the strings underneath, I'll just pluck them. They're running underneath the fingerboard through the bridge, which is incredibly annoying to replace when they break.
I imagine.
And if I pluck them, that's what you get. So that's the resonance that you're hearing underneath.
And nothing is touching them, no. As opposed to the strings on top, which are being bowed or plucked.
That's right. They're not touched in any way, so they just vibrate with the resonance that is coming out of the instrument from the bowings.
I was fascinated because here I added a little bit of Carnegie Hall to your sound, but it's not necessary.
Thank you.
It's not necessary with the violins. Cynthia, if you would just hold up the instrument again toward near your mouth, and just say a few words. I can actually hear the resonant string.
Oh, yeah, you can. Ooh.
Well, we're hearing some of the resonance come through.
Ooh.
That's just the instrument held up near the microphone. It's amazing the resonance that can happen with that. We also need to comment and hold it up to the microphone for our listeners to see. Yeah.
And it's actually beautiful. So the one of the really beautiful things about the Demoria is that the scrolls always had kind of an individual personality.
That's what
personality.
I was going to say. Yeah.
Mine has a blindfolded woman because love is blind.
Also because you can't tell what string
you're on. And
you
can't tell what you're doing when you're playing these strings. And then Cynthia's has a really charming little person with it's a little kind of
hat.
A little
it
hat.
It has a hat and these fabulous curls.
We'll definitely put a picture of these on our website because. Normally a scroll is just that. Is this some artistry is involved in the scrolls for traditional?
Sometimes there are figures on the scrolls, but ours are just
usually not on violins. I mean, very rarely. And I have a friend who has a lion's head scroll on a violin, but it's very uncommon on a violin. So on the Demoria, these were really kind of a moment for whimsy and self-expression for instrument makers.
And is that just characteristic of the Demoria then, or?
The Demoria, I don't know if gambas occasionally.
Often viola da gambas have those. Songs.
Yeah, it's sort of part of more of the gamba family than the violin family.
Nice. Well, let's hear some more music, then we'll talk more about the ensemble, and Catherine will be standing by to offer some details about this particular concert. I believe we're going to hear a sarabande. And this is a sarabande from Partita number 7 for two violas d'amore and continuo from Armonia Artificioso Ariosa, music of Bieber on KALW. Beautiful music indeed from the ensemble Artifice, part of the Partita number 7 by Franz Bieber, being presented as their debut recital, the debut of Artifice, Resonance of Salzburg, Friday here in Palo Alto, Saturday in Berkeley, and Sunday in San Francisco under the aegis of the San Francisco Early Music Ensemble. Live performance here in studio, Cynthia Miller Freivogel and Tekla Cunningham on Violas d'Amore, and Danielle Zuluaga on lute. Danielle, I'm wondering if you could share a little bit of details about the beautiful instrument that you brought with you.
Yes, of course. I am playing a theorbo for this occasion, for the show,
And a fjord was essentially an instrument of the lute family. I'm assuming that a few people are familiar with the name. It's essentially, when you go to early music concerts, that instrument that has a very long neck that just looks very impressive.
Makes for difficult carrying on the subway.
Well, yes, it's worse carrying on a plane. I can tell you that.
Imagine.
So what you have is an instrument that is from the lute family, but is a combination of two things. So you have a set of strings that are over the fingerboard that are fretted a little bit like a regular lute or a guitar, etc., and they're plucked in that sense. Then there's a set of strings that are about twice as long, usually, depending on the size of the instrument, but they tend to be fairly long, that are tuned in a scale. So they're actually just played as open strings, which means what you get in terms of sound is a combination between, say, a lute or a guitar-type instrument and then a harp-type resonance and also low basses.
Could we hear a little bit of that?
Yes, of course. So, for instance, just the fretted strings will sound, a G major chord would sound something like this. So essentially the tuning would be, I'm in a slightly transitional tuning, but essentially is intervalue relationship similar to a lute or guitar. From low to high will be like this. So what you notice is that what will be a very high string actually goes down an octave, which gives the fjordbo its very particular sound. Now, if with the other set of strings, you actually have a scale, and this is not going to be quite a scale because I've tuned it to fit a couple of different pieces, but going down from an A here is, and this G is actually, it's a fourth lower than a cello would normally play, so it's actually very deep.
I guess so, and hence the need for the length of the
yes.
string in the neck.
Yes.
I forgot to mention that Elizabeth Reed was also performing on that last performance. She's on the viola da gamba, which resembles a cello, but it is a little bit different. I'm wondering if you'd share some of the differences between that.
Sure. We hold it between our calves and like a cello, like a Baroque cello, but it's actually a member of the lute or guitar family. So it's essentially a bowed lute. It's tuned in fourths with a third in the middle. It has frets on the neck, and the frets serve the function of making each note sound like an open string. The frets are simulating the nut, and so each note resonates very. It's a very resonant instrument. It's not particularly loud in terms of projection, but it's very resonant.
Very nice. And we do have Catherine Heater here standing by to talk to us a little bit about the program itself. Catherine, I'm wondering if you could tell first, how did Artifice come into being?
Oh, well, I got a wonderful phone call from my colleague Cynthia Freivogel last year saying, I've got this great idea. We're going to put on this concert. It's going to be mostly Bieber, and we're going to bring Tekla down from Seattle, and we're going to have Daniel come from Montreal, and we're going to do this beautiful, gorgeous Bieber music, which all of us are completely in love with, and we're going to use violas d'amore, and we're going to maybe play a few other pieces, Erlebach. I got to choose a solo for just harpsichord, and the idea being that all these composers would have, you know, maybe crossed paths in Salzburg, and so her idea was to call it The Resonance of Salzburg. Cynthia?
Yeah, I found a group of solo sonatas for violin that were in scordatura that were by a student of Bieber called Vilsmeier, and it had a similar title. It had Artificioso on the cover of the manuscript. And there are six partitas that are all in scordatura, many of the scordaturas that Bieber used in these pieces. And that was my path back to the set of Bieber, was through this solo music of Vilsmeier. And the Vilsmeier caught my attention mostly because it's from 1715 from Salzburg, which is the same date and city as my violin was made. And they're having their 300th birthday this year, so very exciting.
Just a quick word about scordatura. And so normally the violin is tuned in fifths, G, D, A, E. And for this concert, I'm playing three pieces on the violin, and I actually have four different tunings. So every single piece has a different tuning. So it's a really, each tuning really takes advantage of the key in which the piece is written. So there's a little bit of tuning, but we really explore each key fully, much more than you can with just a normal tune. So it's
so the scordatura doesn't, for those that aren't familiar, and I'm not terribly familiar myself, it has not so much to do with temperament as it does with the tuning of the instrument itself.
No, it's actually the pitch of the instrument. So you tune as if the top string of the violin is an E, then you tune it down to a D, or you tune it down to a C, or whatever. You can do any kind of combination of things. They never tuned the E string up, because then it would often break. They were often at really high pitch. And the bottom strings didn't go down. The very bottom string, the G string, didn't go down because it got flabby, you know. So, but anything in between was totally game. And this is something that Bieber used to create these kind of spectacular, very Catholic kind of smoke and mirrors kind of effects and beautiful auras around the violin. And I think that it's something, for me, it was a way into early music. That was my way into early music, because it's not really possible to do these things with modern strings. It's just not, the strings are not that flexible. The gut strings make it possible, and the bows make it possible to play these things. So in a way, this music kind of disappeared when we lost early music performance practice, and that's sort of one of the fun things, is bringing back when the performance practice actually brings back a whole range of really cool and very beautiful and almost pop music. I mean, the last thing that we play could be a pop song.
Well, it's interesting you should mention that, because one of the most famous pop musicians is infamous for her scordatura tuning of her guitar, Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, who changed and also the tuning if of her you guitar. Read, if
love
you.
Joni.
Well, everyone loves Joni.
And also, if you read Keith Richards' book, actually, that crazy tome of a book, I actually read the whole thing, totally fascinated, and there's a whole passage about open tunings and scordatura. So, it's something that we think about, all musicians.
Interesting. Well, we are going to hear the scordatura violins duet, but before we do, could we hear the aria, the lovely aria that you used as our opening theme music? In its entirety. This is the aria from Partita number 7 for two violas d'amore and continuo from Armonia Artificioso Ariosa. Live performance of the music of Franz Bieber here in the KLW studios. Music of Franz Bieber from the group Artifice being presented by the San Francisco Early Music Society this weekend. Information at sfems.org. Once again, we heard Cynthia Miller Freivogel and Tekla Cunningham on violas d'amore, Elizabeth Reed, viola da gamba, and Daniel Zuluaga on theorbo, I believe. Yes. They'll be performing, as well as Catherine Heater on harpsichord. Catherine also standing by, fingers free of an instrument here, but free to talk about the concert. Thanks for coming on again, Catherine.
Thanks for
having us. What else is on the program? This is all a lot of Bieber going on.
We're playing pieces from three of the partitas from that one collection that Cynthia mentioned, the very long name, Harmonia Artificiosa. And we're also playing, she's playing a piece of unaccompanied solo violin by Vilsmeier, whom she mentioned also, the 1715, the same year as her violin dates from. And we'll also be playing a very beautiful piece by Erlebach, which features the viola da gamba as well as violin. And and there'll be a piece by Georg Muffat, the elder. And it's a concert that's just filled with, the title of the program, Resonance of Salzburg, has a lot to do with the instruments that we're playing. There's a musicology professor at UC Berkeley, David Moroni, who has a very nice way of saying it. He says these instruments never shout, but what they do is that they resonate. And so with all the sympathetic strings that we have, all of the fretted instruments and the very thin soundboards, the light construction of our instruments, they fill the space with a kind of glowing sound, which you don't hear in instruments that are, you know, maybe made today. So that's what we're really excited to bring to the San Francisco Early Music Society.
And it's interesting
series.
To keep in perspective that a lot of this music is a full two generations before Mozart, but still in the center of Salzburg.
Yeah, I think that was really, really, that's sort of what got me going in this direction. I'm actually really interested in doing a project that takes Bieber all the way to Mozart and what's in the middle. And I've been sort of talking to people gradually about that. And there's these Lautenwerk concertos in the middle. And there's kind of all sort of weird things. I took a course once about Shakespeare taught by a medievalist. And we saw Shakespeare suddenly in terms of what came before. And I always think about that class when I'm thinking about my work as a historically informed performer, that we're looking at Bach not as the beginning and the first guy that did it, but from all the stuff that came before. And you hear so much about Shakespeare being the first early modern, and then you see these great Jacobean dramas and all these, you know, ghosts and things. So I think that the 17th century for me is that really, really, like, sort of more funky area where the violin is really not that old and they're still messing around with it. You know?
Yeah. It was a very, very fertile time. There was a lot of experimentation still with the violin, and so it's very exciting for us. Mm. And speaking of Mozart and Mozart's father, since he actually, Leopold Mozart made a comment about the viola d'amore, which was that it sounds especially good in the stillness of the night. So the ringing strings was something that was really
lovely.
Kind of for the evening.
Yeah. Well, that's Tekla Cunningham. She and Cynthia Miller Freivogel have traded in their violas d'amore, so to speak, for violins now. But they're scordatura violins, meaning that one of the strings is tuned slightly differently. And we're calling this attributed to Franz Bieber, though it may be anonymous. This is a ciaccona for two scordatura violins. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, except that it's actually from one of the partitas. Tekla's also playing on the program, the piece that you mentioned, but which is also a ciaccona. We have lots of ciacconas on the program.
Oh, this is all from the partitas.
This one is from partita number three.
Yes. Ah, okay. First music from that very early Chinese composer.
Right.
Tu Ning, of course, yes. Tu Ning.
Strings are actually like people. They like to go back to where they came from. They don't really when you tune them differently, they kind of gradually go back to their normal place. So we're always trying to get them stay.
Music live here in the KLW studios from the early music group Artifice, music of Ignaz Bieber. I'm sorry, Franz Bieber. Of Franz Bieber performed live in KLW Studios from the music group Artifice, being presented by the San Francisco Early Music Society this weekend for a program entitled Residents of Salzburg, the debut of the ensemble Artifice. Thank you all so much for coming in to doing this live today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having
us. Have a great performance. Still to come here on KLO information, by the way, for the performance tomorrow in Palo Alto, Saturday in Berkeley, and Sunday here in San Francisco at St. Mark's Lutheran Church at the San Francisco Early Music Society website, sfems.org. Continuing here on Open Air, Peter Robinson will be standing by to talk about what to do with yourself in the great outdoors in the springtime. We'll also have a movie review for us. Michael Morgan will be talking about tomorrow's Oakland East Bay Symphony Concert. And we'll have a brief chat by phone with funny man Frank Olivier, who had some car trouble, but we'll get him into the studio one way or another. That's music of Silvestre Revueltas. You can hear tomorrow as part of the continuing 2014-15 season of the Oakland East Bay Symphony, celebrating 25 years under the baton of Michael Morgan, who joins me once again in studio to talk about this concert, which has as its theme Notes from Mexico. Michael, welcome back to KLW.
Thank you. Nice to be here always.
He's joined by Diana Gameros, who will be performing as guitarist and soloist on this concert for some traditional Mexican songs and a work of her own. Diana is originally from Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, and now makes her home living and creating here in San Francisco. And I really like this description, offering inspiring music that reflects the 21st century experiences of a young indie artist at the borderlands between cultures, languages, and genres, a sample of which we'll have live here in the studio shortly. She was selected for the Emerging Leader Award from the Chicana Latina Foundation in 2014 for her music and activism. Diana, welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Of course. Michael, this seems like more of a production than a concert, as in addition to Diana, you've also got Llewellyn Sanchez Werner performing the piano concerto of Carlos Chavez.
I do that all the time. All the time. Yes. I do that constantly.
Maybe he did some writing out in the fields. Carlos Chavez and the Ballet Folklorico Mexicano de Carlos Moreno involved. Well, tell us how this program came together.
Well, this is in our series, Notes From. You know, we have been for the last, 6 or 7 years doing each year a different Notes From concert. We've done Notes From Persia, Notes From India, Notes From China. This year, Notes From Mexico. Next year, Notes From Vietnam.
Wow.
And so the idea being that each year we connect with a not only a music, but also with a part of our community. And we do outreach to engage this community and to let everyone know that the symphony orchestra actually belongs to everybody.
That's nice. How do you make that initial break into the community to get people involved?
Well, it's been different for every Notes From concert we've done, because every community has different ways of communicating, different ways of getting the word out. Most communities have in common the fact that they're always two or three people where if they know something, it seems like it gets around to everybody. And so your task is to find those two or three people and then do the groundwork to get the word out.
Right. Well, a continuation of an oral tradition in that regard.
Absolutely.
Very nice. Now, we started with some music of Revueltas, who is closely associated with Carlos Chavez, also represented on the program, as I mentioned, and born just 6 months before him. Revueltas was assistant conductor of the Orquesta Sinfónica de México, which Chavez founded back in 1928.
Right, and they were all involved with the National Conservatory, which Chavez for a time ran. So Chavez actually was a real mentor to both Revueltas and to Moncayo. And so the three sort of classic, if you will, orchestra compositions are related because their composers were also close. And it's also interesting to note that Chavez, and that's the most sort of really contemporary piece on the mid-century contemporary piece on the program, but Chavez was a great favorite of Aaron Copland, and they were very good friends for a long time.
And I didn't realize either until learning more about this particular program was that Chavez, with the exception of a little bit of training, was largely self-taught as a composer.
That's right, largely self-taught, and you can hear, of course, the influence of there's some folkloric influences in the last movement of the piano concerto. The first movement is really truly a mid-20th century contemporary piece that happens to have been written by a Mexican composer.
And tell us about your soloist, Llewellyn Sanchez Werner.
Llewellyn Sanchez Werner is a pianist I first worked with in Sacramento, I think, last year. He is obviously a collision of backgrounds. Llewellyn Sanchez Werner. There are a lot of countries there, and he is not only a spectacular pianist and a student at Juilliard, but a really serious ambassador for cross-cultural understanding, which he actually embodies in himself, and a really first-rate pianist. And in fact, it was his idea to do the Chavez Concerto when I told him I wanted him on this Notes from Mexico concert. And for someone of his age to actually volunteer such an enormously difficult piece for everybody. The Chavez is incredibly difficult for pianists, for orchestra, for everyone. It's really something. Says something about his character.
It's Michael Morgan talking about the Oakland East Bay Symphony's Notes from Mexico concert tomorrow night. Llewellyn Sanchez Werner being featured in Carlos Chavez's piano concerto. Diana Gomero is also with me here on Open Air. Diana, can you tell us a little bit about your contribution to the program and how you got first involved?
Yeah, well, actually, I met Maestro Morgan at a concert that I did with, or I was invited to do a piece, two pieces with the Magic Magic Orchestra at the Fox Theater last year. And Maestro Morgan was co-conducting. And I did one of the Mexican pieces that I'm going to do on this Friday. And so he heard it. I think he liked it, and
yes,
and he invited me to be part of Notes from Mexico, and I said yes right away. I was so honored and thrilled. I mean, I was so happy.
Well, what would you like to share with us in studio today?
Yeah, well, I will share a little piece of one of the... I'm going to be doing a medley of traditional tunes from Mexico. And these are actually songs that I listened to when I was a little girl. I first heard them from my grandmother's voice. And so these are songs that are really dear to my heart. And one of these, the one that I'm going to share with you, is one that is on that medley. So I'll share a little piece of that. And it's called Farolito by Agustín Lara. Farolito que alumbras apenas mi calle desierta. ¿Cuántas noches me has visto llorando llamar a su puerta? Sin llevarle más que una canción, un pedazo de mi corazón. Sin llevarle más nada que un beso friolento y travieso, amargo y dulce. Farolito, que siempre recuerdas mi tierra lejana. Tú me oíste cantar en la noche junto a su ventana. Tú supiste alumbrar mi canción. Con tu luz me bañé el corazón. Farolito que guardas un beso friolento y travieso, amargo y dulce.
What a treat. Thank you so much, Diana. That is
so
welcome. Beautiful.
Thank
Such
you.
A beautiful light quality to your voice. The guitar playing, superb.
That's Thank you.
What a wonderful contribution you found for this concert, Michael.
We're very lucky here in the Bay Area. That's one of the great things about doing the whole Notes From series, is that you constantly are literally stumbling across people who you really want on the stage and to introduce to the symphony audience, and who are and the thing is that the Notes From concerts are always a learning experience for me and for the orchestra also, and so I mean I know a lot more about the history of Mexican classical music than I did going into this thing, and that's the thing, is that at Notes From concerts everybody should learn something.
And you're breaking down borders as well. And all this talk of putting up borders, here we are nicely breaking down some musical borders for
absolutely
everyone. Very nice. I'm going to ask you to perhaps share another tune with us. Would you like to share another tune, or shall we go to the CD that you brought us?
Sure. I can share another song.
It's just
song.
So beautiful. I want people to hear more of this.
Definitely. I'll do maybe another song that it's not part of the program, because we want you to come out.
Of course.
So it'll be a surprise what we're going to do. I'm going to share a song that that I wrote for an immigrant woman that was living in the United States forever, and she one day decided to go back
to her homeland. The song is called Libre y Serena, which means free and serene.
El tiempo y llegas al mar, llegas muy lejos, vuelves a empezar y preguntan por qué quieres volver a la arena caliente, a los pasos ligeros, a las fotos del baúl, a los ojos sinceros, al cálido viento, a la eterna mañana, al tiempo que te alcanza para dar y para amar. Vas recordando no es todo, y el tiempo gastado en puro trabajo no está bien invertido, que prefieres abrazos a un lindo vestido, y que el tiempo no vuelve, el tiempo no vuelve, el tiempo no vuelve, el tiempo vuelve. Oh, 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 oh. Tic tac, tic tac. Y por eso te va. Por eso te vas a la arena caliente, a los pasos ligeros, a las fotos del baúl, a los ojos sinceros, al cálido viento, a la eterna mañana, al tiempo que te alcanza para dar y para más, a la casa rosada, al calor que faltaba, a la puerta color azul, a tu vida llenita de luz, 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 a tu vida llenita de luz. Y por eso te vas, y por eso te vas. Libre y serena, libre y serena, libre serena, libre serena.
Diana Gameros, featured in tomorrow's Oakland East Bay Symphony Concert, continuing their Notes From series, Notes From Mexico. Tomorrow at 8 at the Paramount Theater, OEBS.org. My guests, Diana Gameros, as well as conductor Michael Morgan, talking about that concert. I wish you a wonderful concert. I'm hoping to catch it myself, but I know that the audience is going to be in for quite a treat. Michael, also the dance involved. It sounds like it's going to be quite an evening of music and dance and celebration.
The dance company is really quite lovely, and they will join Diana for one of her songs, and then they will dance when the orchestra plays the huapango.
Speaking of the huapango by Jose Pablo Moncayo, which you mentioned earlier in our talk, we're going to go out with music from Moncayo's huapango. Not before I thank you once again for coming in and wishing you the best for tomorrow's concert.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're pleased to offer 3 pair of complimentary tickets to the Oakland East Bay Symphony tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock at the Paramount Theater for listeners who call us now. 1-415-841-4134. 415-841-4134. If you'd like to hear the fantastic Oakland East Bay Symphony tomorrow night under the direction of Michael Morgan. Notes from Mexico at the Paramount Theater. 415-841-4134. Still to come, Peter Robinson will be offering us some things to do in the great outdoors for springtime. And next, a brief conversation with my friend, funny man, Frank Olivier. You've got 7 more opportunities to catch him in his one-man show in which he inhabits a dozen or so characters, Twisted Cabaret and Pandemonium Vaudeville Show at the Great Star Theater on Jackson Street. Frank's performed for crowds and luminaries around the world, riding unicycles and juggling knives around the likes of Henry Kissinger, George Shultz, Clarence Thomas, and Jim Belushi, among many others. And for the past 6 festivals, he's been the finale for the prestigious Glastonbury Festival in England. Incorporating great comedy skills and magic into his act, this is no ordinary clown. Unfortunately, his clown car broke down en route to the studio, but I'm still pleased to call him friend as well. Frank, welcome by phone to KLW in open air.
Thank you so much. So much looking forward to the shows this weekend. We did last weekend. It was a blast. We got 2 more weekends here through April 4th.
Very nice. Now, your childhood almost conforms to the stereotypical, I'm going to run away and join the circus, doesn't it?
It almost does. I mean, I started learning juggling and unicycling when I was 11, and magic at 12, and fire eating. I waited until I was like 15 or 16 before I started learning that. I didn't have to run away and join the circus because I had very, very supportive parents. People always wonder how that would be, and I said, well, they were folk singers, so this was a step up the social ladder.
Very nice. Indeed. Well, your comment there brings home the fact that comedy is an important part of your act, isn't it?
Oh, this is a comedy show. It's the other things are superfluous. Magic, juggling, knife throwing, fire eating, dance, even Francine, the 9-foot-tall woman, nothing without the comedy.
And the whole show represents a kind of evolution for you, doesn't it, as elements of this show have been part of your shtick for some time now. How do you decide what works or doesn't work, or does the audience tell you that?
They'll tell you pretty darn quickly what works and doesn't work. But actually, for Twisted Cabaret, we put in the more outrageous stuff. I do all these corporate shows year-round, which have very strict parameters, and I'm good at doing those. I do a fun job with those. But for these, we get to go a little further off the hook, have some fun with it, and really, really do some wild stuff here.
Well, there's 7 more chances to catch Frank's Twisted Cabaret and Pandemonium Vaudeville Show. It's at the Great Star Theater on Jackson Street. And I hope you get that clown car fixed, Frank.
And twistedcabaret.com to get tickets. And for the next 2 hours, we got a discount code of RADIO50. We'll get you 50% off of tickets.
Fantastic. TwistedCabaret.com for tickets. RADIO50?
RADIO50.
For 50% discount to Frank's show. Frank, thanks for taking at least a minute or two with me, and we'll have you on live at some point down the road.
Oh, thank you so much. Look forward to it.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Perfect segue for our next segment with Peter Robinson, who's going to talk about where we can walk in these great open spaces in this land of ours. Peter, welcome to Open Air once again.
Hi, David. Good to be here. And I often think about that phrase, take a hike. Sometimes when we say take a hike, it's not exactly the complimentary invitation to head out to the woods. In fact, it's got something definitive about it. I myself do about 4 to 5 walks a week. I see it as a way of keeping some sense of balance in my life. If you're sitting in front of a computer writing or you're going to meetings in newsrooms, a good counterbalance is to get outside into the great outdoors. And when I think about the actual word hike, I think about the pace I go at. Sometimes I amble, sometimes I trudge, sometimes I tramp, sometimes I saunter, sometimes I shuffle. But however I get it done, there is that connection of being beyond myself. And in the Bay Area, beyond myself can take me to all different types of places. So that now that spring is in the air, I think this is a great opportunity to enjoy some of the wonders of the trails. I have 3 particularly favorite Bay Area trails. There are, of course, several. All of these constitute what I consider to be moderate hikes, and they're all within easy distance of the city. The first is the California Coaster Trail, which is really real down home San Francisco. It's probably a half-day hike, just a little less than 9 miles, and it kicks off at the Cliff House near the Soto Baths, and it goes all the way to the Golden Gate Bridge. And, of course, on the way, it passes through many, many worthwhile landmarks, from Baker Beach to the Sea Cliff area, onto Marshall Beach and onto the batteries at the Bluffs, and then you finally end up at the Golden Gate Bridge. This doesn't seem to be that well known to many residents, but it is popular with tourists, as it's well written in many of the books. A second involves both a ferry ride and a hike, and my choice is not Alcatraz, but it's Angel Island. Once again, you get, if you're a photographer, some wonderful panoramic views of the whole of the Bay Area. You can see the sailors stuck in the Raccoon Straits, which has, of course, a delight because here's the expensive boat not moving in the wind. And then once on the perimeter, there's a whole heap of California history writ large. At the Immigration Center, which is where original Chinese immigrants were held at the end of the 19th century, there is poetry written in the original language, memorizing what those days must have been like. You can then wander on to the officers' mess at Fort Reynolds, which takes us back to the Civil War period, and then on to the missile sites, because in the 1950s, when the Cold War was at its height, once again, Angel Island was seen as a strong post on the West Coast. And, of course, we go back to the Miwoks, the original inhabitants before the Spaniards landed at Iola Cove. This is about a 6-mile hike. You can do it somewhere between 1 and 3 hours. And, of course, there are that rare squad of white deer if you tend to be a real mountaineer and climb the heights. So those are 2 very different choices. The attraction of Angel Island is once again enjoying the ferry. You'll see the sunrise behind Mount Tam, the bells and lights ringing over Alcatraz, and then as you disembark at Iola Cove, you're in the heart of original San Francisco.
Well, your mention of the Miwoks reminds me of a trail that I love across the bridge, just up on the Marin Headlands. The Miwok Trail is great for both hiking and biking.
And that's a particularly good trail this time of year because the spring flowers are now in bloom, and there are special groups which go just to see that. Go a little further where you've just been talking about, and you'll head down to Stinson Beach. And that takes you through Muir Woods. And if there's one person who inspires hiking, it's certainly John Muir. I often wonder how his wife felt as he trudged out of the door one morning and he said, I'll be back later. Later for him meant, of course, 12 years later. And in between, he'd opened up trails in Yosemite. I remember reading in his journal what to me is really the epitome of a person being in touch with nature. Muir was caught up in an avalanche and tumbled several hundred feet down. And at the end, he shakes the snow off, just like a dog shaking the snow off, and he said, what a ride. And I really felt that he must have been in tune. But I highly recommend Mount Tam, the John Muir Trail, the Davis Trail, several choices there.
Actually, if you hike down from the panoramic highway, you can get into Muir Woods for free. You don't have to deal with the parking and can still enjoy everything that's part of Muir Woods.
That's absolutely true. In fact, hiking is probably the cheapest outdoor sport if you think about it. And a couple of tips if you have not been out there before. Don't forget boots with some ankle support, I always suggest. Sunscreen, water, a hat, maybe a cell phone, and perhaps tell somebody where you're going, because there's always that terrible moment when the fire brigade turn up and the rescue squad are in place and all they know is that you had a white hat on, an Eddie Bauer jacket and a backpack. So those are some of my tips at a time when, I've got to say, there aren't too many great movies that are drawing me in. So see this as the opportunity to step out and enjoy the great outdoors. Hiking in the Bay Area is one reason that we live here.
Thanks so much for sharing those, Peter. More Woody Guthrie to go out of this episode of Open Air. I would be remiss if I did not invite you to a special concert on Monday. You can hike on down to the San Francisco SF Jazz Center as San Francisco Performances presents the rescheduled performance date of good friend Garrick, good friend of KLW and of Open Air, Garrick Olson, pianist. He'll be performing selected sonatas of Scriabin. This was a concert that was presented, music of Scriabin was presented back in December, and then he had his spring performance canceled in March due to some dental issues. So the rescheduled concert for March 14th is this Monday, April 6th at SF Jazz Center. sfjazz.org for more information or the San Francisco Performances website. I'm David LaTulip. You've been listening to Open Air here on Local Public Radio. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for herding cats today, especially for arranging for the wonderful live performances here in studio. If you've got a group you'd like featured on Open Air or a segment you'd like considered, drop me an email, david@kalw.org. And a reminder that all of our shows are archived at our website, kalw.org.
This land was made for you and me.